Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals the hidden plain, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. It's my pleasure to be with you. I'm here with Kirk this evening. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
Good. Good. Had an interesting week this week. It parlayed off after something that happened a couple of weeks ago. I think I mentioned I was doing an interview with a fellow named John Wells, and I had really didn't know much about John Wells other than he was the weekend anchor of Coast to Coast, and Coast to Coast is, you know, widely considered to be, was at least, one of the top two or three syndicated radio programs in the country. And I did Coast to Coast, I think, four times, twice with Art Bell and twice with George Norrie. It's a three-hour program. It's a tough one to do. Particularly on us older fellows, because you start at midnight to end at 3 o'clock in the morning, and so my good friend, our brother, Jerry McLaughlin, wrote me an email one day, and he says, "You know, this guy's now got as big an audience as probably anybody has between the syndicated show he does and the other show." And he is actually a really smart, rational guy, and he's willing to talk about what you discover when you translate the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Kirk, you know that there was a time back in the day where I was doing 5 or 6 hours on different programs of talk radio a day on, you know, everybody else's syndicated national program. I did a lot of interviews, and after doing like 5,000 of them, it was Jim Doyle that convinced me to start Yada Yada Radio, and we began that, and then that morphed into Shattering Myths, and now back to Yada Yada Radio. We've done a lot of them, but I wore out on it. You know, the Shattering Myths just became a job. It became a burden. And you know, I felt like I had, there wasn't anything new in the news. And, yeah, I think the insights we provided were so refreshing compared to everybody else's. But, boy, after you've done it a few thousand times, you know, that was enough. And, of course, I said more than enough on Islam. So I've just essentially stopped doing it, and I went back to writing. And then I think most of you know that I haven't been all that attentive the last few months as going through a transition in life where I really needed to get my feet back underneath me. I moved from being in Ohio and Virginia and hanging out in South Florida for the most part, to visit those other places all the time. And it was separation and Lyndon divorce here in a couple of weeks, which was, I think, will be a really positive move for both my ex and myself, and we're both going to be a whole lot happier. And so it's a very positive thing. I kind of talked to you about at the beginning of this program that that I like Yahweh's approach, which is if you're not happy and want a divorce, write a letter. Just explain why. That's what I did, and that's really all he wants. Just write a letter. So much better, really, than all the angst that society puts us through. But Jerry said to do this program, and as we approached the program, I really got cold feet because I got a letter from his producer saying, you know, that stuff's really controversial, and we're on Salem Radio Network in Salem. Of course, it's a Christian radio syndicate, and they're really right-wing conservative Republicans and very Christian. And I said, oh, gosh. And he doesn't really want to talk about the covenant or the translations. He wanted to talk about me. And I said, no, I don't want to talk about me. And I don't want to do it on a religious radio station. And of course, the producer just begged me to do it. And he said, I'll make you a deal. If you do this, we'll devote 3 hours on our much bigger show to your translations and what you learned about the covenant by doing these translations from the Dead Sea Scrolls. I said, all right. I'll do it with one caveat, and the caveat is that that he can ask me any question he wants to about me, and while I will try to be responsive to the question, I'm going to transition to an answer that I think is more interesting than me as often as I can. Son of a gun, we started, and he asked a couple of questions about me, and I figured out just instantly. It was kind of like doing those Islamic interviews that I did where Yahweh was my partner, and no matter what the question was, we just had the right answer. And we did it, you know, over and over and over again. The same thing happened. And it just led to one just remarkably interesting thing after another. And it sort of did, Kirk, what happened when I was doing Prophet of Doom interviews, because they set a foundation of credibility that led to so many being interested in reading yada yada.
Mm-hmm. That was how I
found it. Yeah, that's exactly. Hi, JB. Exactly. And so I thought maybe it could do the same thing. And John Wells now has one of the largest audiences. And what's interesting about John Wells, too, is that remember, I've been saying for a long time that about 95% of radio listenership is online. But we're doing now.
Yes.
In fact, John Wells actually uses BTR. It is the current medium. It's where the largest audiences are. Well, that, according to John, who's a good friend of Jerry McLaughlin, that first show generated 5 million live streams. And it went on to be one of, if not the biggest, archive shows that he had produced. And the feedback that he received was almost universally positive. Vince's listeners said, more please. So John and I did, and I'm telling you this story because it has the potential to be something really extraordinary, and I don't know if it's going to go there. I don't get my hopes up in these kinds of things because, you know, it's really the promotion of Yah's story is out of our hands. So if he wants to raise the flag, you know, we're right there and saying, okay, let's go. But it's his to do, and so I don't get too hopeful on it. It's just that sometimes it's hard to not be a bit excited. So John and I did 3 hours of discussion that he's putting together for a program that I think he'll post on his web-based Arc to Midnight. And it was extraordinary. The entire
thing. Now, that's not pro you did the other day. This is something new, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is one that I did with them. 3 or 4 days ago, we did the recording for it. And I don't know how long it takes him to go from recording to actually posting the show on his site for his listeners. But he'll get 500,000 people minimum that will hear it. But they paid to hear it. and they really pay attention, and it has the chance to be transformative. From John's point of view, he says the single most important interview he'd ever done.
Wow.
He says, I cannot imagine anything more important for us to talk about. It's what the world needs to hear. And he says, you know, all the way through, I've wanted to argue with you, to say that what you're saying is so contrary to what we've all been told, to what we've believed. And he says, so each time I have my questions, and your answers are so compelling, so evidence-based, I find myself just nodding my head and saying, of course, that's the way it must be. He says, this is an irrefutable case, and yet what you're saying is going to strike people like steel. It's going to pierce right through them. And you're just so convinced.
Matter of fact.
Yeah, I'm convincing. I want to tell you, this man's approach, his ability to ask questions, his ability to probe, he's a real pro. I mean, he was a real delight to work with. And I think he and his wife are really searching for where they can make a significant contribution. And so it might be something that happens. Might be something that happens. You know, it's he's really that good at it. And if he pursues it, it could be something that causes the neck to be seen by a lot of people that could have their lives changed by it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because we talked here after the show before about it, but how you were doubtful any good was going to come from it, but you didn't want to turn it down. So if it does end up becoming something that really makes a huge difference, that's going to be, you got to love that irony.
Yeah, the only reason I didn't turn it down, because I love Jerry McLaughlin. He's just an extraordinary individual. And he wanted me to do it, and he put himself out for this to happen. And just because everything about it changed, I have too much respect and I care too much for him not to have done it. And his intuition was right in terms of, now, this 1 3-hour show may be it, because it may be too controversial for what John Wells does. But even if he just presents that 3 hours, it was right there. Everything from all of the insights we learned about Paul to what are the five terms and conditions to be part of the covenant, what are the benefits of the covenant, who Yahusha really is, and how he's different from the Christian Jesus. You know, the fact that God's absolutely knowable, the proof that we have that he exists, from the timing of the creation account to the nature of the flood, to this whole story of Abraham and Yahweh working together. I mean, it was unadulterated Yah, just all the things that should resonate with everyone. We even spoke a lot about time and light, dimensions. And what kind of scientific affirmations we have, as well as how they play into the nature of prophecy, and then even into the language of Hebrew itself and how it reflects the nature of light. And it's a relational, volitional language. And so it's hard to imagine that you could cover that much ground and more in 3 hours, but this John Wells is a very skillful interviewer.
Yeah.
And so it was remarkable. I know I'm taking up time in the program talking about something that was, that may not be going forward, but it struck me as potentially significant. And if nothing else, I wanted to thank Jerry McLaughlin for making it possible, and we'll see where it goes from here. But I was surprised, and I am encouraged. Now, I want to say, can I just flip the wheel to the far other side here?
Uh-huh.
I think everybody knows that that in terms of personal communications, my favorite family member is a dode from down under, from the land of Oz. I just, there's something about the guy that I've just always liked. I mean, we've never met, but our correspondence, he's just a guy that I like. I'm just really comfortable around him. And he wrote me an email that was kind of talking about, making this change and transition of my life that I spoke of in the beginning of the program. And he wrote something that I had never thought about. And I just want to share it. This is, I'm hoping that this comes across well, because I view it as it draws a smile on my face anyway. So he was talking about, says, do you think it is possible when we transition from 7D to 3D and we're doing, as I like to say, we're feeling the coolness of the stream on our toes and the warmth of the star of that planet on our cheeks and listening to the wind blowing through the trees. Says, do you think that we would have any opportunity to be there with, he says, if we're a man with a woman that we're passionate about, who we love and who loves us, and be able to share an embrace? I thought about it. So why not? Now, I know Yosha said, there's no marriage in heaven. I think what he was doing, he had it in Greek, so we don't know what words he really chose. But, he was answering a rabbinic question and trying to play with their little minds. And I get that. When you're dealing in seven dimensions, the spiritual realm, we're not going to have physical bodies.
Yeah,
we're matter. Spiritual beings. We're going to communicate and have a depth of communication, of sharing, that will be extraordinary. And in every really wonderful, loving relationship, sharing and communicating effectively, talking about and experiencing things that we're all passionate about, we're both, it's just hugely important. But that's not to say that when we transition into 3D, because we're going to have to do that, otherwise there's no way to eat and to sing and to enjoy really the timing of the Moed Mikre, that when we're in 3D and quite often exploring the universe, that we couldn't go off with someone we genuinely love. And I thought about it some more. I said, Yahweh created Chawa for Adam. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Adam for Chawa. And, they figured out how to use the design and rather like the design because they had children, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, I've said this before. I'm a heterosexual guy. I think women are beautiful. I really do. Dudes, not so much. But I think women are beautiful. And affection and a loving relationship is probably, if there's something better, I don't know what it is. And so, if God designed us that way, and that was an experience in the Garden of Eden, and we're going to experience camping out with Yahweh forever, in an Eden-like state, and the universe he's going to create for us, why would we expect him to change and all of a sudden say, I designed it so it'd be really, really fun for you guys, but we're not going to have that kind of fun in the going forward, so too bad for you. I just can't imagine him.
Humans are one of the only, if not the only species that has sex as much for procreation as they do for fun or enjoyment. Don't really have sex for enjoyment. It's purpose-driven, continuation of the species, evolutionarily driven thing. With humans, right, it's not that way.
No. No, it's probably 99% for enjoyment. For,
yeah.
To, and to add, when it's done right, to add a depth
and
dimension to the relationship. So I wrote my friend Doug back, and I said, I'd be surprised if it was any other way. So I just thought I'd share that, and the last thing any of us need is an incentive to want to camp out with the owl for all time. It's already way beyond our ability to comprehend. But it was just, it would be so yah to create a way for his children to celebrate relationships.
Mm-hmm.
That in the right way, for the right reasons, at the right time, in the right place, why would we expect to fall in love and be in love?
That makes no sense not to. Joked around that, there are going to be two things that I'll be disappointed that if they're not there in eternity, sex and dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, that's my next, I can't say acquisition, but because the guy that I'll be buying the puppy from doesn't sell dogs, although he charges a fair price for his dogs. He plays with his dogs, and I've always enjoyed female yellow labs. And there's been two litters, and one of those cute little yellow female lab puppies, and one of those two litters from a guy who has won more national championships than any other breeder. So he considers himself the foremost breeder of labs in the country, and has the credentials to show it. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not a celebrity about the labs being champions, because I don't show dogs. I just want a lab to be a lab, which is a loving family companion that is just a pleasure to be around.
My favorite kind of dog, too.
Pretty soon I'm going to have another dog. The dog's name is going to be Asher. Asher. The word that began it all for me. So. I'm pick my favorite relational word for a dog that's all about relationships.
So that's what's happening.
All right, let's return to Isaiah 4:3. Then it will come to pass that he who remains in the Zion, along those signs posted along the way, along with the remnant spared in Jerusalem, they will be called set apart, Kodesh, for all who approach him are written and scribed for lives. In the source from which guidance and teaching regarding reconciliation flow. Gosh, I love that statement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then it's going to happen. God's talking about the last of the last days. And he says, Haya. That show we did, we spoke a lot about Haya and the nature of how Hebrew verbs not only explain Yahweh's nature, but how they are written as if they were light themselves, just existing in all time. And it will come to pass that he who remains, Sha'ar, now this is really insightful. He who survives, he who remains alive, having escaped death, the one who is really left behind. Now, what's interesting here, this is the antithesis of the Christian concept. Remember that Left Behind series that made fabulously rich? And, oh gosh, there was 1% truth and 99% lies in them. And boy, but they sold millions and millions and millions of copies. Yeah, Christians will buy anything, believe anything. And they call the series Left Behind. being left behind was a bad thing because that means you weren't raptured. Oh, you were left behind. Well, from Yahweh's perspective, those who are left behind, that's good. These people were left behind. They were spared.
Mm-hmm.
They're spared an onslaught. But by using this verb, we know that we're only talking about survivors. So a lot of, and this is Yisrael and Yahudem, Yahudah. So there's going to be a lot of people that don't make it. That's why for those who would cling to the idea that, you know, I've got time, I really don't have to worry about this, you know, there'll be, I can take care of this on a different day. I'm here to tell you, you're not going to find that that's going to necessarily be all that easy. The world's going to annihilate itself. And the one place that's going to have a few survivors is going to be Yisrael, and even then, they're going to be decimated.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the few survivors in Zion. Now, what's interesting about Zion is that, you know, you're Yisrael represents, what, 0.2% of the land in the Islamic Middle East. And that probably represents 10% of the land in the world. So it's 0.02%, the land of Yisrael. Well, the land of Yahudah, you know, would be less than 10% of the size of Israel, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And Jerusalem would be probably 1% the size of the land of Yahudah, wouldn't it?
Yes, sir.
Well, the signs that go up that ridge line between Dode's home and Yahweh's that represent Zion represents 1% or less of Jerusalem, doesn't it? Jerusalem?
Sure.
So it's 1% of 1% of 1%?
That's a small number.
Yeah, but far less than 1%. So he's really, really dialing in here. Now, he could be dialing in here to give us a sense of quantity, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're dealing with 1% of 1% of 1% of 1%, boy, you're dealing now in the kind of numbers that that Yahweh has always shared, 1 in a million.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're going with this, right?
Yes, sir.
0.01 times 0.01 times 0.01, 1 in a million. I never thought of that before, but he could be quantifying the number of those who survive. But he also could be drilling down here and saying, all right, a lot of Israelites are going to come to back to Israel because the rest of the world is going to become so anti-Semitic, including the United States, where 40% of the Jewish population worldwide live, that the only place where Jews will feel even modicum of safety will be Israel. And, of course, then they're surrounded 100-to-1 by Muslims who are armed to the teeth. But what Yahweh was saying is, just going back to Israel is not enough. Coming back to Yehuda is not enough. Coming back to Jerusalem is not enough. Those that are really serious about finding him are going to be found clinging to, observing, walking along Zion, checking out and responding to, being directed by those signs posted along the way. Now that tells you how important Zion is. And, you know, we did, but I think there's 2 chapters just on Zion.
Mm-hmm.
And we've covered a lot of detail on Zion. And now Yahweh was reinforcing the fact his children that are going to be spared, that are going to become part of his eternal family, they're all found in one place. Zion. So, if you're reading this in 2030, 2031, 2032, 2033, on man's pagan calendar, yes, 6,000 Yah, finally. Go to Zion and pay attention to what Yah has posted there. That's the best advice we can give you. And between now and then, if you don't want to be caught up in this hailstorm of death, pay attention to the signs that exist between Dod's home and Yahweh's home, and do so right now. So those are going to be spared in Jerusalem. So let's start in the beginning. Then it will come to pass that he who remains in Zion, along with the remnant spared in Jerusalem, will be called, set apart, Kodesh. Kodesh. Why Kodesh? Why would Yahweh choose Kodesh?
Set them apart. Made them
set apart from what?
Set apart from the rest of the world, like the first.
Right.
The first
set apart from man's way. Right.
Yeah.
You know, during this this show with John Wells, the one place where my answers never resonated with him, and maybe I did a poor job, with uncircumcision being the fifth condition of the covenant. And I bring this up right now because of set apart. And so, respectfully, John said, you know, I just don't get it. So, can you tell me why, in your opinion, why is circumcision required to participate in the covenant? And I said, well, you know, and it's all related to set apart, so this is really not going off in a different direction. And the first thing I told him was that well, I'm going to give my insights, because you asked for them twice here. Mine don't matter. The reasons I think that Yahweh chose it as a sign of the covenant do not matter. He chose them. He's emphatic about them. It's his home. It's his choice. So it doesn't matter whether or not I like it, whether or not I agree with it, or whether or not I understand it. It doesn't matter. They're his conditions for his covenant. Now, that said, I tried to explain it, that the covenant being based on Bereth is predicated on the Hebrew word bayat, which means family and home. And that God's idea of the perfect kind of a relationship is that of mother and father with their children, and the children with their mother and father, in a loving, supportive family. And that the instrument that a man uses to become one with his wife and to become a mother and father is that part that he once altered in this way. Circumcision. Doesn't tell you how much, doesn't tell you anything other than when he would like it done. Doesn't say how he wants it done. Just wants a little bit set apart. Just a little bit set apart. To remember at a place that's really important to men and essential, required really, to conceive a family. And anything that's required to conceive a family makes sense as being required to be part of the ultimate family. And it's all about set apart. Karat, to cut. So as to be cut into the relationship and to be set apart from the world of men. Well, that was my answer. I think it's best I understand. I think it's Yahweh's answer. But, you know, I don't have Yahweh's intellect. And so I think the reason that Paul prevails so mightily is so many people want to prefer, Paul's antagonism over this physical sign to Yahweh's insistence on this sign as the ultimate symbol of the covenant. J.B., you wrote a whole book on it.
Mm-hmm.
What did I fail to say that I should have said?
I don't think there's anything I could have added to that. That was pretty much spot on. It's a way of getting it summed up and out there.
What's known for certain is you cannot participate in Passover without being circumcised.
Yeah.
What's known is you, as a man, you can't enter heaven unless you're circumcised. Those are emphatic. Absolutely emphatic. We have God's testimony and no uncertain terms. I mean, so you cannot argue that it's impossible for an uncircumcised man to enter heaven. It's impossible for an uncircumcised man to benefit from Pesach and therefore the doorway to life. Those are just facts. And specifically asked parents, which would be mom and dad, to do this on behalf of their sons so that they remember. Obviously to raise their child so that their child also gets to know Yahweh, and collectively they all become part of God's eternal family, because that is the best prescription for all of us. So it's a choice that men and women, husbands and wives, mothers and fathers make collectively about how they're going to raise their children. So those things we know for certain. And we know that it's done on the eighth day because eight is the symbol of eternity. We talked about that on the program as well. So it goes back to, I like to speculate as to why I think God chose it. And those are my thoughts.
Can I ask you if there's anything that would have to do with, this is a mark, and it's a mark on us that separates us out from the world of 99.9% at that time uncircumcised people, and that's fine. But also I was flashing forward to this remnant in this area when Satan has taken over, and they all take a mark. Satan always copies something that Yahweh does and twists it.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously there's something to this having a mark on our bodies that sets us with this group or that group. I mean, maybe that's a non-point or not. It was kind of running through my mind as we were talking about it. He makes a big deal out of having them take a mark. To show that they belong to him, you know. Well, Yahweh is a pretty big deal. You belong to me. You're part of my family.
Yeah, for a long time, most people were illiterate. And so their signature wasn't a very effective way to say, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
But circumcision, it's a pretty good way of signing in blood, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what's really cool about it, if it's done right and you're circumcised on the eighth day where you have no choice in the matter and your parents honor the commitment to raise you so that you remember Yah, then as you are a child in their relationship, if both parents are as you are with Patty, JB, your daughter, should anything happen to you or her while she is still under your care, she's in the covenant. And the same thing would be true if you had a son. Because of this choice that you've made to remember Yahweh in your lives and hers. And then when they reach an age where they're independent, they can think and act for themselves, then your son or daughter has the option of choosing to accept what they have been taught, what they have been shown, or to reject it. Free will and all. But they have the basis of that knowledge. So they're making an informed decision. And that's the thing that's so sad about religion and politics, is they have robbed people of the ability to make an informed decision about God. And that was the reason I was so excited about this show I did with John Wells, is that is that if he continues, then many, many, many people are going to have the information they need to make an informed decision about Yahweh, which is the purpose of circumcision, so that they also can choose to be Kodesh, set apart from the world, to be such that you're not depending on your government for your freedom, for your well-being, or your religion, for your salvation. Set apart from those things. Isn't that wonderful? Wouldn't you? I mean, I just love the idea of the idea of becoming set apart. Do you know, if we're called set apart, there are two connotations to that that ought to just give us goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to ask you guys to guess what I think are the two connotations of that. But isn't the spirit of Yahweh the Ruach Kodesh?
Yes.
So if we're called Kodesh, doesn't it signify that we might be somehow identified with the Ruach Kodesh?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that wonderful? To have that affirmation that those who are set apart and spared are those who are going to be equated with the Ruach Kodesh.
Yeah, I think you have a unique quality of being, I would think.
Yeah, that makes us beings of light. It makes us immortal. It makes us perfect in Yahweh's eyes. That's really cool to be called Kodesh, because it identifies all of those with the set-apart spirit.
Well,
there was also a Kodesh Kodesh, and there are two Kodesh Kodeshes in Yahweh's parlance. One is really clear, and the other is a bit more subtle. What is the right-in-your-face Kodesh Kodesh?
In the
Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
That's
the one that's kind of subtle. You do have to do a little bit of of noodling in the old cranium to recognize that when he's speaking at the most set apart, that he is speaking of Yosha, in the sense that Yosha is set apart from Yahweh and then set apart from spirit to matter, to become the human manifestation of the Torah and of the diminished manifestation of Yahweh. So he is, in fact, Kodesh Kodesh. But there is a Kodesh Kodesh that's far more in our faces.
The inner sanctum of the temple where the Ark of the
you
Covenant.
You got it.
The Ark of the Covenant.
Bingo. Yeah. Correct. Absolutely. And so to be Kodesh is to be right there in that inner sanctum, right in the heart, in the very presence of Yahweh, in his house of the witness. That's a good place to be.
Now,
isn't that after all where the signs posted along the way lead?
Yep.
So to be called Kodesh, really, really good. Now, I've used we here, and it is we, and it's not we. Let me share what I'm thinking about here. We're not going to be, none of us listening to this program, are going to be among the Israelites set apart in Zion and Jerusalem on this day. We're going to be harvested on a teruah years before this occurs. So why did I use we? Because Yahweh is consistent. If this is what he's going to call those who have paid attention to the signs posted along the way and have survived to embrace him, isn't that what he's also going to call us?
Yes.
Yep.
I follow.
So it's we.
Mm-hmm.
We also will be called Kodesh. Because for all who approach him, let's see, I cheated here. I didn't have to be smart to recognize that also applies to us, because it says, for all who approach him, that would include all of us, wouldn't it?
Yes. everybody.
Yeah.
That approach.
Yeah, that's all means all. That's what that's all means. For all who approach him, La Hu Kol.
Kol.
Yeah. La Hu Kol. For all who approach
him. It is an open book test, remember.
It is right. It is an open book. It's the easiest test in the world. In fact, when I was doing this interview with John Wells, and it just so many things I'm just reinforcing here because they just came out. There's so much came out in 3 hours that that's important. And in this program, we have a tendency. It's my fault entirely, but I have a tendency to speak about where we are at the level we are. And all the things we've learned. And so these little nuances mean a lot to me, and I think a lot to us. And I forget from time to time that, well, there's fresh ears out there that jumping in at this level is not going to appeal to. And so with that program, we went right back down to the basics. And the basics here are important. So it's this... idea of approaching him and of everyone approaching the same way. It's how I explain the story of Abraham. So God specifically laid out for Abraham for us to know what was asked of him to become part of the covenant family and what he was offered in return. And what I said is that since this is what he asked of Abraham and what he offered him in return, and since God is unchanging and consistent, if we act upon and accept these same conditions, Yahweh will absolutely and unequivocally offer us the same benefits. And so that is what's being affirmed here. For all who approach him are written and inscribed, engraved, recorded, permanently marked. Here's your marked.
As your marked, Kirk, yeah.
In a tablet, book, or scroll. And then this is what is so amazing. In Jerusalem. Ba Jerusalem. Do you think that, I don't think this that there is a scroll in Jerusalem that says Kirk Miller or Terry Miller on it, or James and Patty Bowen.
Patty.
Yeah, I don't think that's what it says. What I think, could Yahweh have it? Absolutely. Could he have a book in it? Now, there is a book in Jerusalem that where everything is written and inscribed that we need to know to be set apart. That's the Torah, and that the original copy of the Torah sitting right next to the Ark of the Covenant at the base of Mount Moriah. It's right there. And so I think he is talking about the Torah. But I think that the proper written read of this is not to say in Jerusalem, but to explain what Jerusalem means. If there was ever a time that the meaning of Jerusalem is what mattered, I think this is the time. So I would prefer to say, in the source from which guidance and teaching regarding reconciliation flow. That's where we're written. We are written and ascribed in the source from which guidance and teaching regarding reconciliation flow. You know, it talks about this time in Jeremiah 31, and what he's saying is that there is a difference between the covenant relationship he established with Abraham and the one that he's going to establish with a unified Israel and Yehuda. And the primary difference, of course, is that his name and his Torah are ascribed within us. And what we've talked about is that the existing Torah will actually be counterproductive in eternity.
Yeah.
And so there has to be a Torah lowercase d, if you will, that is just Yahweh's teaching and guidance and directions, telling us how to operate in seven dimensions in such a way we get the most out of it and do the least amount of harm.
Amount of harm.
Stuff out there that's dangerous. And so we really need God's guidance to be able to really appreciate and get the most out of our eternity. And
I remember when we
what
first
this seems to suggest is that this is what's going to happen, is that this guidance about reconciliation is where is something that Yahweh is creating specifically for his children. And as we go forward, we will be written within that new Torah, because just as it is placed inside of us, we become part of it. We become part of its story. Because from that point on, you know, Yahweh in the existing Torah has to talk about all the bad stuff that happens so that people appreciate what not to do, so they have a better appreciation of what to do. And none of that bad stuff
is tremendous.
It'd be counterproductive to know that bad stuff going forward. All we need is the good stuff. And it's not just that the Torah is written inside of us. We become part of the Torah story. Isn't that a lovely thought?
I like this too.
That's the sweetest sound in the world, isn't it? Just the sound of a young child. So, that's what I think is being said here, and I think that if you recognize the nature of Hebrew poetry, where the same thing is said from a slightly different direction, I think then, therefore, you can equate Jerusalem with Zion. That the signs posted along the way provide a source from which guidance and teaching regarding reconciliation flow. And they are the means not only to Sa'ar, to survive, remain alive, but also to be Kodesh, set apart.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I mean, what a marvelous insight into what Yahweh was offering and how we capitalize on it.
It is, you know, and it makes me even more angry on that they took the word like Kodesh. And they changed it. Well, first of all, if you look up Kodesh and you figure out where the word comes from, which is Choli and Chala, and they changed it to Holy in English. And then you look up where Holy came from Choli and Chala and Chul, and you go, my God, this is disgusting that they took a word that important and twisted it that much.
Replacing Yahweh's name with the Lord.
Yeah. Well, that goes without saying. That's way big. But I mean, they take everything that is precious to him to communicate to us, and they changed it so horribly. And anybody could look it up and see that ain't what it means.
Right.
And it just makes me sick.
Yeah, you know, I said this before. I thought that there are very few things that God conveys that are more important for us to understand than the concept of set apart Kodesh.
Yes, I agree.
That Yosha is set apart from Yahweh. That means he's not the entirety of Yahweh, just a tiny part of Yahweh. To understand how Yosha is set apart from Yahweh provides the perspective to understand who he is and what he's doing and who's really doing it. Yahweh. The fact that the Spirit is set apart, to understand why she is set apart, explains how Yahweh engages in our three-dimensional world.
Mm-hmm.
To understand set apart helps us appreciate the purpose and the symbolism of circumcision. To speak of set apart helps us envision what Yahweh is looking for when he tells us to walk away from the society of man, from our father's homes, from from our country. Be set apart from those things. It's the essence of where you're going to, what you're going to choose. Are you going to choose man's way, which is politics and religion? Or are you going to choose God's way, which is to be set completely apart from those things? Religion or relationship? So I'm with you. I think one of the greatest travesties in translation is rendering Kodesh holy. Taking a powerful concept that is essential to our understanding and essential to us forming a relationship with Yahweh and understanding who He is and what He's offering, and corrupting it to a despicable pagan term.
That's what He does.
Yeah.
Yep. Whereupon, meeting these conditions, the upright one of mine shall wash away the excrement and filth of the daughters of Zion, and by association purge and rinse away the blood of Jerusalem from her midst, by way of the spirit of good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes, and by the spirit of blowing rage. Wow. This particular statement, let's just provide some details. I've long felt that we deprive ourselves by not being pedantic. And it's one of the things that people who don't like me very much will say of me, that I'm pedantic, which means I'm just way into the details. And those who really like me will say, what I like about you is you're really pedantic. You're really into the details.
Flesh of my mouth.
People who despise me and people who love me both call me pedantic, but with one group it's a good thing, and the other thing is a bad.
That's the negative.
Like it's a Hebrew word.
I love some details. Some
yeah, I love the details. And that's what's being conveyed here. This is a really interesting tidbit. This isn't the kind of thing you need to know to be among those who are called Kodesh. But if you like the details, to have a better appreciation of what's happening here, how it's happening, why it's happening, when it's happening, the mechanism behind all of it, God has shared some really cool insights, and this is just one of them. Now, maybe there's a profound spiritual truth here.
The devil's in the details, but the same is equally true. Yeah, you find so much of Yahweh's character and nature within the details of things.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yahweh's in the details just as much as, quote unquote, the devil's in the details. You find so much in the subtleties, the nuances that they give you the nuances of His character.
Mm-hmm. So we're in agreement. So I'm viewing these as details, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe there's a profound truth in here, but it says, whereupon meeting these conditions, Him. Because when decisions are predicated on this, the upright one, the upright pillar of the tent of the witness of mine, the upright one of mine, the Edon, shall wash away the excrement and filth of the daughters of Zion. Well, the upright one is Yosha. But I don't think Yosha is the only upright one. I think Dothan's an upright one. I think Abraham's an upright one. I think Noah's an upright one. I think there are a number of upright ones. But if you were to limit the upright one to a single individual, you'd say that it was Yosha. And since we're still in a 3D world here, Yeah, we could well be using a physical manifestation to accomplish some of this. And so the upright one, my upright one, my Edon, could wash away the excrement and filth of the daughters of Zion. Now, this is really kind of interesting, too. Is he removing the filth from the daughters of Zion so that the daughters of Zion can have a relationship with him? Or is he removing the daughters of Zion because from his perspective, they need to be purged as a result of their excrement and filth? Which one do you think?
Well, it says of daughters, remove the excrement of. Yeah, and then you say rinse away. Usually when you rinse something away, you're thinking more of rinsing something off of, like you clean your clothes, like they, which is probably like when that story about Yosha, when it's, you know, take that rag off and put a clean rag, clean clothes on.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's the key. Yeah, but he could wash away the excremented filth of the daughters of Zion, which means the daughters of Zion have become so disgusting that he's just washing them away. It's like you can't remove religion without removing the host of religion, which is the faithful believers. So both are possible, right?
Well, only if they've approached him. Then he can clean them.
Well, yeah, if they've approached him.
If they've approached him, then it's a no.
Then he is cleansing them.
Yes.
Right. If they've approached him by way of the signs posted along the way, and they've approached him, he's cleansing them.
Yes.
If they haven't approached him, and they are still alive, but are still excrement and filth, then he's washing them away. Now, is it possible that both are true? Without conflict? Yeah, absolutely. Both can be true without conflict. The daughters of Zion, Bath Zion, and by association, purge and rinse away, Duach. It's interesting, you've got Rashatz and the Duach. It can mean very similar things. Shall wash away, shall cleanse, immersing in water, which can be trusted to remove impurities and scum, or duach, to purge, rinse away, be done with, casting away the rotten sickness and festering illness. So in this case, I think the first verb, Kirk and JB, could speak of both. Washing away the excrement of the daughters of Zion because they're filthy religious whores, or of those who have turned to him, washing the religion and politics from them so that they can exist in his presence. But this second verb related to washing away the blood, there's only one way to interpret it.
Yeah.
He's removing it.
Yes, in a way.
Scrubbing it such that there's no trace of it. He's removing all evidence of the crime. Purging and rinsing away, being done with, casting away the rotten sickness and festering illness of the blood, the blood stains and blood guilt of Jerusalem. I've shared, and I even had a chance to talk about this with a woman that married an Israeli man who's, I think her father or mother is an expert scholar teaching Hebrew, and we were talking about the translations of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and in fact, just this very substantial number of the people that are working on my book are really open-minded, non-religious, not political, totally fascinated by the opportunity to know Yahweh. And, you know, coming over just for conversations about it and wanting to take breaks and just talk about it. And it is something that there's so many people today who just want to know. They know there's something terribly wrong with religion and politics. Mm-hmm. they've begun that walk away from those things, and now they really want to know. And God is saying here, all that blood that has been spilt by those who thought they were being patriotic and heroic and religious, all that's going to be purged. Blood's gone in Jerusalem. And one of the things that these that was pretty much ubiquitous in, amongst the stories of those who have come to me that have been working on the boat, is that they've been to Israel. And I said, you know, I've been there too, and I didn't like it. I always get a little twinge there when I say I didn't like Yahweh's favorite place, but it's so polluted. It's so poisoned with religion and politics. It gave me the creeps. Well, there's places I was inspired, but you know, seeing you want to look at that hideous dome of the rock, Alaska Mark Mosque on top of the Temple Mount, and then you want to envision these places that Yahweh cares so much about, and you've got sepulchers and all of that sort of thing. It is about as disgusting, really, as anything could possibly be. So it needs to be clean.
Out of his way to pollute that place as
right.
much as possible, to the point where, yeah, why would you want to go there?
Right. And so I said, I really want to go back, but I don't want to go back until Yahweh scrubs the place.
Yeah.
That's what he's going to do here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's not scrubbing it for me, but he's scrubbing it for us.
I
want to tell you.
That's
for himself. Well,
yeah, and for himself. Yeah, but for us, it includes him, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Family includes mom and dad.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's why I said that as it comes to the Torah being written inside of us, we become part of the story of the Torah going
that's
forward.
That's a good point. Good point.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what he was saying in that earlier statement. And here, he's going to cleanse it for all of us. And I want to go back once it's cleansed. I want to see it as it was intended to be. I don't want to see it as man mucked it up. It's just so essential, I think, for people to understand that God's idea of a perfect place and relationship is exemplified in the story of Eden. No religion. No politics. No death, no blood, no corruption. That's what the whole earth is going to be, and then the entire universe. And so, Yahweh is going to scrub the universe of politics and religion and its deadly, deadly consequences. Because while it exists, God can't camp out with us as he did in Eden. This is affirming that the world's going to be without a political system when Yahweh returns, without any trace of religion, without any death or a reason to die. The story is reinforced in so many different ways. So, I will purge and rinse away the blood of Jerusalem from her midst. Now, this is how he's saying the way I'm going to do it. That's why I think this is just an interesting detail. So the upright one is washing away the excrement and filth of the daughters of Zion. And it's the spirit of Bishvat. And the spirit of blowing rage that wipes away the blood that is so badly stained, Jerusalem. The spirit of good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes, the Ruach Mishpat. Well, we've got the Ruach Kodesh, and now we've got the Ruach Mishpat. I'm going to make a suggestion here. It might be controversial. I think they're one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Mishpat is clearly the means to exercise good judgment, the desire to exercise good judgment, the commitment to exercise good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes. We all have disputes. It's all things that we need resolved. I don't think there was any better example of this than Dode. Not my friend down under, but the one from long ago. He had more flaws than hair on his head, by his own admission. A deeply flawed guy. You know, one of the guys laying tile on the boat, we talked about the covenant. And what was important to Yahweh, and he said, I'm sure it just all comes down to being good, right? And I said, no. Being good's irrelevant. Meaningless to God. What? No way. I said, yeah, every religion has already told you that what's important is being a good person. God could care less. In fact, the person that he caused the most good on earth is the person he clearly condemned. Shaul. So what I shared was, let's take a different approach. What does God say about the person that he most loved? The one person, he said, I am his father, he is my son. He never said he was good, did he? He said he was right.
Right.
So what matters is being right.
And that person never even claimed to be good. You know, Dode never claimed to be good. You know, his own words, I have more sins than the hairs on my head.
But he claimed to be right.
Well, he knew what he knew what Yahweh
was. More importantly, Yahweh claimed that he was right. That's even more important.
Mm-hmm. I love so the spirit of I've done all this. I've done all this wrong. I've got your Torah, and I'm coming in the door.
That is correct, because he's right. If you exercise
the means
to resolve disputes, you are by definition tzedak, right? Correct.
Correct.
Yep.
And so the purpose of the set-apart spirit is to immerse us in her light so that we look perfect in God's eyes, because where there is perfect light and complete light, there is no darkness. So we, all of the disputes, all of the negativity is gone. God just sees us as perfect kids. The set-apart spirit that does that, I think that the Ruach Kodesh and the Ruach Mishpat are one, and that this explains the means that Yahweh is going to use to accomplish this, which is we're immersed in his spirit. I think he's providing a powerful detail here. But because man, women, have the propensity to get all squirrely and to project on God things that are not true, like he's all loving. He wants to save everyone. Rubbish. He wants to make certain that we understand in context that just as that first verb could mean that he's cleansing the daughters of Zion, it could also mean that he is rinsing away all trace of the excrement of the daughters of Zion. This is not just the spirit of good judgment but regarding the means to resolve disputes, but also the spirit of blowing rage. God's upset. He's disgusted by those who have promoted religious ideas, who claim that they represent God, that they're conveying the word of God, that they are worthy of their people's devotion. He is disgusted by every nuance of the Roman Catholic Church. He's disgusted by every nuance of evangelical Christianity. He's disgusted by every aspect of Judaism. He's disgusted by politics and religion and of militarism, and how man has so recklessly destroyed, killing, that which God not only created, but loved. And he is, and I think we all ought to be, he despises that which is hostile to the well-being of his children. And what could be more hostile to their well-being than religion, politics, and militarism?
Yeah. Kills his soul as well as the body.
Right. And if you don't hate that which is harmful to your family, you aren't loving them. So Yahweh wants us to know that hate is a virtue. And when you love your family, you will despise those who would do them harm. So this shows Yahweh with balance. Love and hate. It shows him washing away and of cleansing. I think they're details, but I think they're powerful details that help complete a picture that provides a more comprehensive understanding of who Yahweh really is and what he's offering. And I think it's that perspective that makes all the difference in our lives. That it's the difference between knowing and understanding again. If you have an appreciation, a love for, a passion for these details, and you see how these tiny strokes create the bigger picture and the role that each of these tiny strokes play in creating that bigger picture, the depth of your understanding and therefore your enrichment, enlightenment, empowerment, all grows. You know, Kirk,
yes, sir?
You and I have a difference in the way that we approach these programs. Your way is better than mine. But my way has... No, your way is better than mine. But my way is the only way that I can do this and be transparent and real. And I don't know if you know what I'm going to say now, but I'm always just so appreciative of the work that you put in to look up these words and to validate the little details, the nuances that make the text so rich, the shadings. I love it.
You're very talented, but that's not... I do it because it's...
But you love doing it, and you're really good at it, and it enriches us all. That's the right way to do this. I don't do it that way.
Well, you wish your motivation.
I come at it fresh every night.
Huh?
And I do it for the same way that I made that agreement with you a long ago. It's certainly not laziness, because, you know, I put in the...
No,
time.
Hardly.
I really do. I'm passionate about it. And I love the work. Put in the time. But for this program, I don't prepare. And the reason I don't prepare is I want it to be raw. I want to be vulnerable. I want to experience what it's like to draw new insights, to come together with important new thoughts, and to see how all of that helps shape a perspective that enriches us all. And it's living in the moment with Yahweh and realizing that if we're doing it right, that between the words and the spirit and our experiences with Yah and what we've learned and understanding and the insights that are provided, that we're going to have a really rich experience together. And that's the reason I prefer to do it this way. I'm really comfortable to do it this way.
Yeah.
And I think we've all benefited from it. It's also one of the reasons why I will almost never read the insights that I derived from the text during the show or prior to a show.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're doing it right and we're growing, then shouldn't what we find not only reinforce what we have written, but also augment it and go beyond it? Yeah. What's the purpose of simply reading what can already be read? Isn't it a lot more fun and exciting, real in the moment, to collectively be augmenting it, going beyond it, and trusting that that's what's going to happen every time? I don't think we've ever had a program where it didn't happen that way.
No, we hit something. Last week was remarkable. there were those two things where you that where you said, okay, all these verses where he's where Yahweh is running down people, in particular Yehudim and so forth, and their behavior, and then his name is never associated with that. Those verses, and then finally, when he says something remarkable, and that's where we ended the show, his name finally appears, and I thought, well, you know, that's the you know the first tablet that he writes. You know, I won't associate with. Don't bring around other gods. Don't bring all that stuff with you, or I won't be there. You can't be with me. I mean, I thought, well, gosh, that's so obvious, but I didn't see it till you pointed it out. I mean, I thought that was remarkable. I really did. And then every word in that last verse was so positive, and I couldn't find the negative in it. And I'm going, that's really cool. I mean, this guy is incredible.
Well, let's augment that.
You're incredible,
if we could, Kirk.
Yeah, I wrote it, you know. I'm going.
What you've just said is a transition into what's next said.
Mm-hmm.
You said that Yahweh's name was never mentioned while he was speaking of all of the filth of religious dress-up, for example. Right?
Right.
Never mentioned. And then he does away with it. He's talking about the promises to his children. The name's profound again. We just went through a number of statements where he's saying, I'm going to wash away the scum. I'm going to cleanse the place so it's fun again. Going to get rid of all the stress and all that negativity, and we're just going to have the ultimate fun zone. Guess what? Then Yahweh will create, initiating something, cutting edge. We're back exactly the same way. He's cleansed it, did away with the death, the destruction, the stress, the negativity. And guess what? His name appears again. Yeah. So it explains, too, why he had to have the upright one and the spirit of exercising good judgment about the means to resolve disputes clean up the place before he appears. Right? Yosha, as a diminished and set-apart manifestation of Yahweh, was able to exist for a period of time in the midst of the sea of religious scum, wasn't he?
Yes. Yes.
Yahweh couldn't be there, but Yosha could. Same thing is true again. He's going to use these tools of his to clean everything up, these means, and then he appears. Then Yahweh will create, initiating something cutting edge upon every location and dwelling place along the ridgeline of Zion, as well as over her Mikra, by way of a cloud by day, and the smoke, and the brilliant, shining radiance of majestic light, of flaming fire by night. For indeed, upon all this manifestation of power will be a sheltering canopy. All right, so he's perfected it. He's cleaned away all traces of man's pollution, his propensity to kill, his propensity to anguish his creation. It's all gone. And now he's going to create something new. He didn't say he's going to create something new everywhere, though. At the beginning, the first thing he talks about is he's going to create something extraordinary in the location of the dwelling place along the ridgeline of Zion. But what's along the ridgeline of Zion? Dode's home?
He and Dode's. Yeah,
well, Yahweh's home. You know, one of these programs we do, we hold a whole series of shows because we wrote chapters on Zion. And the Zion really is the connection between Dode, the band that Yahweh set apart to say, this guy is right. And he understands what it's like to be part of my family. And that's why I'm his father and he is my son and I love him and he's right. And the path up that ridgeline to Yahweh's home, that's what's going to be created anew. And it was my conclusion that Yahweh's home on the top of that ridgeline for the 1,000 years that it will exist is going to be a building comprised entirely of light. And there's going to be a bridge between Dode's home, which is going to be spectacular, but probably material, probably a physical structure, marvelous. But there'll be a bridge of light that's going to go over those purifying waters that are going to, you know, emanate, that are going to wash away all of the negativity and the pollution of the Dead Sea and flow into the Mediterranean and just cleanse the land. I think that's what he was speaking of earlier, this cleansing effect of water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to rush out between these two and over a bridge of under a bridge of light. And he's saying that this creation that he's going to cause to exist on the dwelling place along the ridgeline. He didn't say religious place. He didn't say the political place. He said the dwelling place. Well, there were two dwellings on the ridgeline of Zion, weren't there? Only two that mattered.
Yeah.
David's home. That's it. The home of the man who is right, and the home of his and our God.
Yeah.
So it's the dwelling place. It's a very important detail. On the ridgeline of Zion. So we now know that Zion, the signs posted along the way, are posted between the two residences, don't we?
Yes.
And what is it that connects those two residences? It's the mikrah. The invitations to be called out and meet God. Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavua, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah. The seven invitations to meet with Yahweh, where he invites us to intend so that we can camp out with him forever, are the mikrah. It's the mikrah that make all this possible. He has now equated mikrah and Zion with dwelling with him in his new creation.
Yeah.
Mikra, Zion. So the invitations to meet with God and be welcomed into his family are directly connected here to Zion, the signs posted along the way, on the ridgeline and dwelling place of Zion, of Mount Moriah, is what God's going to create anew, and where he is describing his name. Now, it's interesting here that he uses two symbols to say how he's going to be present there. Because, of course, Yahweh is still in the mode that it's a physical realm, which means it's 3.5D. He's 7D. 7D don't fit into 3.5D. No matter how powerful you are or how creative you may be, it's impossible. Kirk, you can't enter one of your pictures. You're 3D, your pictures are 2D. Can't be done. Yahweh cannot enter our world in 3D. But, you know, he had a way of revealing his presence to his children at a critical time during the Exodus, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Wasn't it by way of a cloud and a pillar of light?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's reprising that, isn't he?
I picked up on that right away, yeah.
Yeah, and if he's reprising that essential story in the heart of the Torah, it tells us he himself is the living embodiment of his Torah, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say he's not changing anything. He's reaffirming what he's already done. He's consistent. That's the way he's going to present himself. It's the same way he presented himself to his children during the totality of the Exodus, as he liberated them from human oppression, religious and political, military and economic slavery and oppression in the land of Mitzrayim, and brought them into the Promised Land. That's exactly what's going to happen here. Radiant light and this Amon, this cloud of vaporous cloud, cleansing and light. Flaming fire by night. All of this manifestation will be a sheltering canopy. So what the set-apart spirit does for us individually, now this light is going to do collectively for this new creation on Zion. It also suggests that my extrapolation that his home on the top of Mount Moriah was going to be comprised of light. I think that was a pretty good guess.
That's, yeah, it's confirmed here.
It is confirmed here.
Yes.
Well, even though this is a wonderful place to stop, this is also a wonderful place to start. I'd like to return to the same place next week at this time.
Yeah. Good with me.
What do you guys think? You get to put your cute daughter to bed, and we all get to kind of bask in the realization that this is what Yahweh is doing once he's cleansed the land, and this is what's going to exist for 1,000 years thereafter.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
It's tremendous fun.
Sounds like a good plan for me.
All right. May Yah bless, and happy Shabbat.
Shabbat shalom to all y'all.
All right.
Shalom.
Good night. Bye.